Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Metro Access Subcommittee meeting today on Tuesday, January 17th, 2023. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. And as usual, we will place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. I would share just a few helpful tips for people who are joining through phone calls. You can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everyone who is on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, you can click on the raise hand icon and that will raise or lower your virtual hands. If you're able to use these tools, it helps, it indicates that somebody is trying to speak and we can have one speaker at a time. To begin with, everyone is on mute. So please stay on mute unless speaking. It helps us in keeping the external noise out and everyone can hear clearly. We do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, I would request when you speak, please state your name before you make your comments. It helps them in doing their job. Everyone who is on the phone calls, it also helps them knowing who the speaker is at the moment. Anybody who would like to make public comments, either you can raise your virtual hands at the time we begin the section, or you can send me a chat message if that's possible, and I would put your name on the list. If you raise your hands virtually, we would take the comments in the order the hands go up, or if somebody has sent in their name ahead of time. Just a reminder that we try to keep the limit to 3 minutes, unless we need to reduce it to 2 minutes. And we practice this to make sure that anybody who is intending to speak and make comments gets an opportunity to do so. If we have any additional time remaining and anybody who would like to make additional comments would like to do so, we would definitely come back to you. Please do understand that we do want to give everyone an opportunity to do so. I do see that Chair Semaford has joined. Chair Semaford, I can read the agenda out loud and then take the roll call.
Please do so. Go over with the agenda and then take roll call and then we can begin.
Yes.
From there.
Okay, wonderful. I'll share my screen so that people who can see can view the agenda on my screen, and I would be reading it out loud. So bear with me for a second. After I finish reading the agenda, we'll go through the roll call of the committee members. At 4:05 scheduled is reviewing meeting agenda for today's meeting and approving it and approving last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have customer service report as well as the commendations report. At 4:20 p.m., we have the Michael Wilson Award and the AAC Metro Access Safety Award. At 4:30, we have 6-month service update by Mr. Blake. At 4:45, we have call center outage update and follow-up questions. And the discussion would be led by Mr. Blake, Allison Anderson, and Chair Semaford. At 4:55, we have easy pay questions. That discussion would be led by Ms. Rush, as well as Ms. Anderson. At 5 p.m., we have Metro Access Vehicle Accident Update. And that discussion would be led by Mr. Blake and Ms. Anderson. At 5:05, The topic is, where is my ride response application pilot update and customer feedback by Mr. Blake. As you can see, we have a lot of topics for discussion in today's meeting. At 5:15, Chair Semaford and Ms. Rush will talk about Metro Access Subcommittee second vice chair. At 5:25, we have conditions of current Metro Access flat fare. And the speakers are Ms. Anderson and Mr. Blake. At 5:30, we will have an update about web booking reported issues by Terian Williams Hall and Allison Anderson. We will go to our public comment period at 5:35, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m. I would stop sharing my screen at this time. And when I call out your name, the AAC members, please confirm your presence. Azar Atura. Darnese Bush.
Present.
Thank you. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present. Thank I am you. On the phone. The last three is 058.
Okay, thank you. Rico Dancy. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Rico okay. is here, excuse me.
Okay, thank you. Debbie Fisher.
I'm here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum.
Sorry, I didn't realize I was muted.
Okay, thank you, Marcy. I got your I have your presence. Thank you. Philippa Mazzell.
Here.
Thank you. Sandy Newsel.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner. Dr. Posner informed that he would be joining a bit later. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes today's roster. Chair Semaford, at this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Thank you so much. So the first thing we will do is, are there any additions, approval of the agenda? Are there any additions, subtractions, suggestions? This is a very full agenda we have to get through. Hearing none, I would like to move the agenda as is, if I can get a motion.
I'll move.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, aye. Abstentions. The motion carries to move this agenda as is. The next thing is the review of the minutes from the prior meeting, which would be in December. Are there any additions or any suggestions or anything that needs to be done to those agenda those meeting notes from December of 2022? If not, without objection, I would like to move those meeting minutes as is. All right, I guess so moved. We will. We have unanimous consent of the committee to move the meeting the December 2021 Metro Access Subcommittee meeting minutes as is. All right, next we're going to go to Customer Service Report and Accommodations Report. Ms. Anderson and crew.
Good afternoon, everyone. Can everyone hear me all right?
All right, excellent. Again, my name is Allison Anderson. I'm with the Office of Mentor Access Service, and it is my pleasure to present Ms. Kay Clark with MTM to give the update to the public comment resolution report from our last meeting. Kay?
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me for not being on camera. I'm having an issue with my video here. But following up from the AAC and the Metro Access Subcommittee meetings, there were no public comments to address. As far as commendations, Metro Access received 382 during the month of December. Broken down by partner, we have First Transit that received 73, TransDev 81, MVOCC 92, Challenger 60, Next Transportation 67, MTM 2, Eligibility 2, and last but not least, Abilities Ride 5. And this completes my report.
Thank you. Next, then we will have Ms. Anderson. Is there a Michael Wilson Award or AAC Metro Access Safety Award?
Yes, sir. We have both this afternoon, so it is my pleasure to present Angel Randall, who is with Next Transportation, and she is going to present the Michael Wilson as well as the Metro Access Safety Award for today.
Good afternoon. So first, I would like to start with the Michael Wilson Award, who is going to go to Metro Access operator Kisha Jones. She began her employment with National Express Transit in January 3rd, 2017. Kisha consistently strives to deliver professional excellence in every aspect of her service she provides to our customers. She has shown her willingness to help others whenever in need. Ms. Jones always demonstrates a positive attitude along with a high level of professionalism. She is the ideal Metro Access operator. Ms. Jones shows patience and understanding to all of her customers. She puts safety and customer service at the forefront of everything that she does. When she's not working, Kisha loves spending time with her family. Ms. Jones is a mother of two adult children and a grandma of one grandson. She is a former business owner and beautician with over 30 years experience. Ms. Jones is overtly motivated by God. Her empowerment is just do it. Her focus is stability. Upon her relocation from North Carolina to Virginia, Ms. Jones was in need of employment. So she stepped out on faith and applied for National Express Transit. And she will proudly tell you that she loves driving for Metro Access because it allows her to meet and serve people. She is always rested, alert, and ready for work. Ms. Jones displays an extensive knowledge and enjoyment of her career at National Express Transit. She takes great pride in her job. She displays loyalty and honesty, perseveres and achieves her goals. And National Express Transit is honored to have such a compassionate, caring, and dedicated employee as Ms. Kisha Jones.
Thank you. Thank you all for selecting me as being that award winner, as to acknowledge me in greatness. I truly appreciate it. This is unexpected to me to receive this such award, and I must say thank you. And I will continue to do my duties as I am supposed to, because I do love people and I do love Metro Access. And I also do acknowledge our great trainers that's here is doing great work, and I thank you all. I truly appreciate you. God bless. Thank you. Thank you. Great training. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir.
To our customers.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. And to move on to our AAC Metro Access Safety Award recipient, Ms. Ebony Murchison. Ms. Murchison is a MAX operator. She began her employment with National Express Transit on August 28th, 2017. Ebony performs a variety of duties, handles many situations with ease and is comfortable with change. Ms. Murchison has trained countless new hires. She is the ideal behind the wheel trainer. She shows patience and understanding with new and existing employees. She always maintains a professional attitude. She puts safety and her passengers' well-being first. Ebony offers safety advice freely to others seeking clarification. And if there's ever anything that she doesn't understand, she doesn't have any problem coming to management for assistance. Ms. Murchison is a stickler on policies and procedures. She feels that the company's performance standards come first. During her tenure with National Express Transit, she has no reportable incidents and is rarely observed on drive cam. She is a diehard New York Giants fan. When she is not working, Ms. Murchison enjoys cooking, going to the movies, museums, and traveling. When working, she takes great pride in the job, displays loyalty, honesty, and consistently overachieves safety goals. National Express Transit is honored to have such a compassionate, caring, dedicated, and safe employee as Ebony Murchison.
Wow, beautiful. Thank you. I'm a service, which I shouldn't be. but I really appreciate the recognition. Thank you, Ms. Simon.
And thank you for all you do. It is most notable to note that this base is 1.2 miles from my house, that we have another outstanding Metro Access base. All of them are good drivers.
Thank you.
All right, next we are going with the agenda here. Mr. Blake, you're up next for this 6-month service update. Can you hear us, Mr. Blake?
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. This was just to go over, because we were looking for agenda items, as you know.
I have plenty now.
That's why I'm not going to be too long on this. So let's talk about what you want to talk about. But service has been running normal. We haven't reduced anything, changed much. We have some plans or some ideas we're going to be sharing with you probably for next year. But we had a couple of tough months in November and December in terms of OTP. They weren't as high as we like, but they were still, you know, competitive when I look at my competitors and my colleagues in the industry. But we had some IT issues that you have rightfully brought up to us, Mr. Chairman, over these last couple of months. And those did impact our numbers to a bit. But we're continuing to move forward. You are recognizing, of course, more shared rides. We're still in the 40s, but it's a lot higher than it was last year. But that's natural. We're out of the pandemic to a certain extent. I mean, we're out of the pandemic. We're moving back to normal, and ridership is coming back. I think ridership is coming back faster on paratransit than on fixed route. So, shared rides, again, we're still under 50%, but that number is probably going to creep up a few more percentage points over the next 6 months of this remaining of the fiscal year. But other than that, I just wanted to, I was going to have more of a dialogue, but since you've added some agenda items, I think we can go from there. I could answer some questions specific about this, but if you want to go to your other agenda items, I think that...
The only question I have for you is right now, compared to pre-pandemic, I know average ridership daily was around 8,000-9,000 customers hovering around that. Now, I believe it's still, as I last look at the monthly stats, it's hovering a little bit over close to what, 6? 5 to 6?
More like 7.
Oh, we're getting up there. Okay.
Yeah, we're about 7,000 a day on the weekdays. And then what happens, though, keep in mind, for the customers who've opted into some alternative transportation, that takes the paratransit ridership down. So that's where you may see the 5 and 6 at, because they're customers who are using the alternative services. But when you look at the total number of trips that we're facilitating, we're getting back up there.
Okay, so the number that I see that's much lower is pure paratransit on the van and sedan trips. And this is minus what the true number is where all the Ability Rides customers are at.
That is correct.
On a monthly basis. Okay, that's good to know.
Yes, sir.
All right, now we're going to tail dove on some of these issues here while I still have you on here. So after the last meeting, we had another outage with the call center, and I happened to call in at the end of my trip, and what I heard is call back in 30 minutes. Now, I know we had a meeting about when this type of issue happens, that it's not appropriate for staff to say that, and that really deeply concerned me, just on for safety reasons alone, to tell customers to call back in 30 minutes, that there is a procedure in place, if customers are calling in under those circumstances, to give them certain pieces of information. And one instance with myself, and I'm sure this has happened to other customers, you know, the driver in this case, you know, had my pickup but didn't have the drop-off address. And from a safety standpoint, that driver needs to know that. And the reason I'm calling in is the driver is not given that information until I had to press to get that done to a certain level. And then I asked to speak to a supervisor about this issue, and they're trying to, I get this level of resistance that they're going to tell you the same thing. But my thing is, okay, frontline staff can't give this information out. Then at least the supervisor should know, someone should know at the call center, because I found that out later ultimately because someone called back, but the immediate supervisor I was transferred to didn't know, and maybe my ears have wax, maybe correct me after you've listened to that message. I was told by that supervisor, just tell the driver the address, which I know by your policy, that's not an appropriate thing to do. So ultimately the driver was able to get someone to respond back to him after I felt being, you know, and I know a lot of things were going on, not giving the information at first so that we can continue this trip. And I know if this is happening to me, this is happening to a lot of customers. So my conversation with you about this topic is, this has happened again. We know management has said that there is process and procedure in place. I feel like, and I know other customers may have felt like at that time, safety's thrown out the window. And I know y'all work very diligently from messaging, from what I've heard from, you know, both, you know, where's my ride staff, every staff on down, you know, safety is the number one thing. But when we get into these situations, it seems like it's the antithesis of that. So I'm going to let you begin to respond, Mr. Blake.
Okay, so yes, there was a outage. We did our best to eliminate it as soon as possible, but let's talk about the experience you had. Calling in and getting information is fair. We're not saying don't call in, but keep in mind at the time, I would not say to a customer, call back in 30 minutes. That's not what I would do. And that's not the answer we want. But what the call center is trying to do is get the information to the drivers. Customers are calling in. They're being put on hold, or they're asking to be patient or call back. I understand your frustration and your concern, but where the failure was is the team needs to be able to respond more quickly to drivers in cases like that. The driver just needs to know the information, because even though the outage affected one piece of equipment, as long as the driver knows where he or she is going, they can put it into the Garmin device, which is sort of separate from everything else. And that was somewhat by design, so that even if the Ranger goes down, you get the information from the call center, and then you proceed to where you're going by just putting the information into the Garmin device.
But the issue, in this case, they were not giving the driver that information. He's calling on the radio, by process, and not giving anything.
But that's my point to you. The response time by the call center to the operators who are calling in at that time was not ideal. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, then the customers are calling, so they're trying to respond to the customers at the same time. I'm not making excuses for it for anybody, for us or the mm-hmm. system. What I'm saying to you, though, is what we're working with them in is trying to be more responsive on all on days, not just when something goes out. The call center understands they need to be more responsive. And as I've been looking at the data, as I've been walking around the call center, I think they have been improving their response rate. They understand, and the management team is overseeing their efforts. What we're trying to do is eliminate on our end, to the extent we can, there's some dependency on our end of the technology, but we want to eliminate those outages. And when there's an outage, the team needs to just understand they have to, this is a crisis moment. They have to be in that mindset that we have to be faster and more responsive. We're working with the OCC on that end of it. We're working with our colleagues on the IT end of things. Will there never be another outage? Now, I'm not going to say that, obviously.
Oh, no.
But what I'm asking customers to do is be patient in those situations. Your safety is our priority. We're going to get you. We're going to take you home. But while you're talking to the OCC, remember, every moment you're talking to them, that's just a moment they're not telling the driver where to take you. Not saying don't call in. You could call in and check, but if they ask you to be on hold, we just ask you to be patient. We're getting the information out to the drivers as quickly as possible.
All right. Is there any comments from any of the ACC members as it relates to this? Ms. Rush?
Chair Samerford, this is Anu. I do not see any. Oh, Ms. Rush, go ahead.
I understand what you're saying, Mr. Blake, but... for anybody to tell you to call back in 30 minutes so that they can tell the driver where to take you is unacceptable. And I guess I know that the system goes down, so there's no more printed paper. Everything is... it's no more printed when they knew where to pick him up. There's no destination on where to take him anymore.
Well, So the answer is right now, no. We're using a paperless manifest, but keep in mind, even in the good days in the past, I was going to say good old days, in the days past, even when you use the paper manifest, Chris Blake, driver of van 5304, may have Denise Rush on my manifest in the morning, but by the time it comes for me to come pick you up, that trip probably has already been moved 3 or 4 times by the computer or by a human based on the conditions on the ground. That's the dynamic of paratransit, that is door-to-door versus a fixed route, where Chris Blake on bus B24 is going to be there, but if Chris Blake isn't there, then somebody else may be in that vehicle on that fixed route, or that fixed route vehicle just won't go out that day. On paratransit, okay, with all the dynamics of accidents on the street, customers canceling, and things like that, a paper manifest is almost irrelevant as soon as we get off the lot, quite frankly. But to your point, though, your first point, And I agree with you and Mrs. Semaford as well. That's a matter of training. For you to be told to call back in 30 minutes during a moment like that, those aren't the words I would use. And I don't think that's the words even that the leadership of the OCC has trained their employees to use. So we have to work on language in these tough moments like that. But I feel confident in saying, at least in that case, despite the language that we would disagree with, I believe that the agent at the time was doing their very best to try to get the information to the driver for not only Mr. Semaphore, but all the customers who were calling in at that moment so that they can be, so that the operators can proceed with their pickups.
So when the client gets on the bus and they really don't know, and he says, I don't know where to drop you off. And it just so happened it was Mr. Semaphore, but it could have been somebody else. And the customer could have said, well, shoot, now I can go to the, I my numbers. Have him drop me off, and I can walk from the numbers place to my house. See, and then something happens.
Right.
It's going to be a mess. It just so happened it was Paul, and Paul didn't tell him. And that whole situation was messy because it does give the customer the opportunity to go to the cleaners, go play their numbers.
Let's be clear, though. Let's be clear, Ms. Rush. It gives the, and it wasn't just Paul that day. So let's not say it was.
No, I'm just saying in general, in scope, you know.
There were a lot of people that day impacted for that brief period of time. And yes, Paul may have wanted to go to the cleaners or go play the numbers. But be clear, the driver, no operator is supposed to take the address, the destination address from the customer. That's why that whole battle, we say the driver is listening to the GPS when you know how to get to your home better than the GPS, but the driver is really supposed to follow the GPS because that's the address that has been given to him or her by the system and move on. And if the system isn't working and telling that driver where to take you, then the driver is supposed to wait until he or she gets an official address from the call center.
But like
I said, because the system is down that particular day, it may be up to 30 minutes or less. So you're saying that the customer is supposed to wait until the driver gets instructions from the OCC.
Yes, ma'am. For your safety. For your safety, for the customer's safety, for the driver's safety, for everybody's safety. It's an inconvenience. I totally recognize that. We do not wake up in the morning hoping that the computers go down. But if the computer goes down and the information isn't transmitted to the driver, yes, we ask for your patience. And as soon as we can get the information to the operator to take you to your official destination, that's what we're trying to do. Get the information as quickly as possible so that the vehicle can move on. But taking directions and addresses from customers, even yourself, I love you. If I was an operator, you could tell me I've been to your house, all that kind of stuff. But if I don't see it on the Ranger, I cannot and should not take you to your home unless I know that's officially
where I'm supposed to go. I must understand on the call that the first person that Paul reached at OCC told Paul to give the address to the driver. Am I confused, Paul?
That's what I thought I heard from a supervisor that I was finally transferred to. So
that's
why
what I'm saying.
I'm going to go back and listen to that call. I mean, the calls are still recorded, and we'll have to go back and check that out. If somebody told you that, then they were wrong. But the answer is no, you don't give. But even if that's what the supervisor and the OCC said to do, which would have been wrong for them to say it, what I'm proud to hear is that even if you tried to give the driver the address, he or she said, no, I want to get it officially because that was what their job is supposed to do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I understood happened. That Paul told the person at OCC that's not I'm not giving the address because that's not safe for me to do that. He should know where to take me. All right.
But in any case, we just made that point. So hopefully, as Mr. Blake said, the OCC with more training in these type of situations, we will get a much different outcome.
We agree.
All right, next on the agenda, I'm going to move the order of operations. And since you're on, Mr. Blake, we're going to talk about that accident that happened not last Saturday, but the Saturday before, that vehicle that was supposedly coming to Vic be up, and then it supposedly was in the, I was told by, where's my ride staff, the driver was involved in an accident. Of course, they told me because it was close to my home. There was no way I can avoid not seeing it because I sent you pictures.
Mm-hmm. You did. And we looked at the video from the interior of the vehicle as well as the exterior of the vehicle. And yes, so this was a Saturday morning, very early Saturday morning. I was about to eat my 5 pancakes and enjoy another day off, but I get a call from you about a terrible accident. Of course, I'm worried and nervous, and it looked a lot worse than it was, thank goodness. And I just have to say that it looked a lot worse than it was. But yes, our driver in a van was proceeding legally and rightfully to make a left turn. A vehicle, impatient, for the lack of a better word, trying to get around the van, hit the van in the rear at a very high speed and tipped the van over to the side, and then the vehicle itself caught on fire. There was a passenger in the vehicle, and the passenger was transmitted to the hospital. The driver was taken to the hospital. The Metro Access driver was taken to the hospital for observation. He stated he wasn't hurt per se. And again, we're thankful for that. But out of caution, he was taken to the hospital. The driver of what we would refer to as the adverse vehicle that caught on fire was cited for his actions in driving. And this was counted as what we consider a non-preventable accident, meaning there was no fault of Metro Access or the Metro Access driver for this accident, but the driver of the vehicle that caught on fire was not injured and never requested medical transport. He spoke with the local law enforcement and proceeded on. We stayed out of that conversation, yeah, if you will. But yes, it was not too far from you. It was on the way there. But yeah, this was a situation where a Metro Access vehicle was hit by a unsafe driving act. I won't call the driver unsafe because I don't know the person personally, but their act that morning was unsafe and it caused a bad accident, but one that could have been a whole lot worse.
Because when I saw it from my perspective, because I had to go up to that intersection to meet the Uber because that whole area was blocked at the intersection of my street address in Temple Hills Road, I'm seeing a totaled vehicle being taken away, which is the one that hit it. Looks like an SUV, half of it totally destroyed from the front, first half. And like you said, caught on fire. And then you have this Metro Access vehicle on its side. I said, it must have really hit it with such speed and force, because that's a big van to make it tip like that. But I'm glad to say that, you know, everyone is safe in that situation. And, you know, like you said, it's not non-preventable. The driver, you know, was doing everything right.
That is correct. He was just making a normal left turn. Coast was clear, as they say. There was no oncoming traffic. There was no hard stop, nothing. It was just a person being impatient, trying to get around him.
And this was at 5 in the morning.
Right. Wow. So I'm like, where are you off to? I mean, I was like, so, but he hit the van, and I think the tip over, or the speculation or the conclusion we've had about the tip over, is that it was just the van is making the left turn. You have that natural lean and you hit it at the right amount of speed. And as he's making the turn, the van rolled over and onto the side. But again, we're just grateful that no one was hurt, either the adverse, the operator, neither the customer. So we're thankful for that. But again, we wish it wouldn't have happened, because it it goes to our safety record, and non-preventable or preventable, it counts, you know, as an incident, and we just have to try to learn from it.
Is there anything, well, one question that has in mind, and you probably don't have the answers, or is there anything that would can be done to the vehicles to keep it from tipping like that in situations like that, or it is what it is, I guess. You know, something like, I don't know, anti-tippers to the vehicle, that type of thing, that would just keep it, you know, in a stable position. I doubt it, but
yeah, I'm just thinking about like the device you're talking about. You put something on the sides of vehicles that would be used in a situation like that. One, I don't know if it's totally perfect, it would keep a vehicle upright, but now you have these things sticking out from the vehicle that could hit other cars. Just
got it.
So yeah, I don't know if we want to do that. We've got some other ideas for comfortable, smaller, and we hope more safer vehicles for you and other customers that we'll be bringing forward hopefully soon.
All right, thank you. Any questions from AAC members about this? Nope. Next, we're going to go back to easy pay questions. Ms. Anderson. Ms. Anderson's there? Now we're giving you a break, Mr. Blake.
No, I'm here.
Okay. So I'll let you go ahead first.
Okay. Would you like me to address Ms. Rush's inquiry first and then yours, or how would you like me to proceed?
Go ahead with Ms. Rush's first, since she brought original question.
All right. Again, this is Allison Anderson with the MAX office. Ms. Rush had an inquiry about who is eligible for refunds. So there is the WMATA tariff that has certain guidelines for circumstances of refunds. So those guidelines within the tariff center around customer death, expired certification, a medical condition which would prevent a customer from continuing to utilize Metro Access, and also if a customer moved 100 miles or more outside the service area. We also recognize that there are circumstances that we may receive a refund request that may not be mentioned in the tariff. I mean, the tariff cannot cover all circumstances. And so within the tariff, it does provide an outlet for that. And that is, should we receive a request that is not necessarily accounted for in the tariff, that request would require leadership approval to go forth with that. Also, especially during the pandemic, we saw this a little bit more cropping up, and that was sometimes, you know, customers may have been a little uneasy about utilizing Metro Access since it is public transportation, or just in general, unhappy with the service. So if we receive refund requests under that guise, we will honor those. However, that customer certification would be inactivated. Okay. Doesn't mean that customer, if they chose to need Metro Access in the future, they could reapply, but they would have to go and start that application process all over again should they want to engage with Metro Access again for their transportation needs. So that is the information as it relates to refund requests and how that process goes. Are there any questions on that?
Any questions?
Ms. Anderson?
Yes, ma'am.
A lot of people get money put in their easy pay from the government. And then the government, they work with the government 10 years. Mm-hmm. And you know, they use it every month, but they haven't used it all. Then they had the big layoffs. Did people get their refunds, or can they get their refunds? Because that money is on their easy pay, or what happens there?
What happens there is, yes, we have entities, a lot of government entities may fund the easy pay accounts via smart benefits. Should there be a dollar amount on that customer's account, that money is not going directly to the customer. That money would go back to the funding entity, and then that entity, if they chose to, could give that money back to the customer. Or we've had instances where the funding entity would send us a letter stating that it was okay for us to give that refund directly back to the customer. But that's how that works.
And if a customer passes, you have to have a death certificate. Is that correct?
We do ask, yes, that there's a death certificate or some form of proof that we can tell that those funds should be going back to that person that's requesting them.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I'll move on, Mr. Semelfort, to your inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
So to set the stage, Mr. Semelfort had contacted us because in his Easy Pay account online, he was seeing a negative balance and he wanted to inquire as to why that was. So because technically he should not be seeing a negative balance online. So we did do a deep dive. Our IT team dug in. And what we found was back in August of last year, Mr. Semelfort had booked a trip on the web, like he usually does, had booked a trip on the web. And at that time, there happened to be a simultaneous glitch, which ended up with those funds not being taken out of the Trapeze system. It was taken out of the Easy Pay system, which is the system that you see online, but it was not taken out of the Trapeze system, which is utilized when customers are booking a trip. So there was basically an overstatement of $6.50 on the Trapeze side. So that's what led to the out of balance and why Mr. Semelfort was seeing a negative balance online when he looked at his Easy Pay account. Now, what we did to resolve that was to adjust the Trapeze side by $6.50 and remove that amount, which should have been done back in August when that trip was booked on the web. Again, we just found that to be just one instance. It wasn't an instance where it involved other customers. It was just his account at that time where the glitch happened. And we did not see any other, again, customers' accounts affected by this. And let me say this also, that
this is a rare occurrence. Like
Thank
I said, the last the Seven last time this happened, in which Ms. Anderson did a deep dive, I want to say was almost 7 to 8 years ago.
Yeah.
So from what I heard, this is a very rare instance. When they catch it, they really try to nip this in the bud to make sure it almost never occurs again.
Exactly.
Because we're dealing with people's money.
Exactly. Thank you, sir. And actually, there happens to be an effort underway right now because I'm leading up this particular project where we are upgrading some of the back-end systems to mitigate this type of occurrence from happening in the future. So again, we thank Mr. Semaford for bringing it to our attention so we could get after it. And luckily, we're already making efforts to, again, upgrade our back-end systems such that this type of occurrence would not happen in the future.
Because my concern would be on my end with customers is I don't want to hear customers saying money is being taken out of my account, you know, and you know, we want to keep the credibility of this system, you know, because it is a great system for payment.
Correct, correct. So thank you for that, Mr. Semaford.
Any questions from AAC members about that?
All right.
Nope.
I appreciate the time and your listening ear. Thanks again.
All right, not a problem. Next on my on our agenda is Mr. Blake, you're up next again. the Where's My Ride application update. You can probably give us an update, then I'll give you some feedback like I do. And any other person who is using the pilot can give feedback also.
Well, I don't have much of an update other than we're still running the test and we want to hear from you. So let's start with your feedback and other customers who may have some feedback, and then we can go from there. But overall, the pilot is still underway, testing is still underway, and efforts to make it right and make it a viable option and use case for customers continues to be a priority of ours. But please share your experience, because that's why we're running these tests, so we can hear unvarnished experiences as to what's been going on with the use of this effort and this technology.
Well, what I will say is it's still right now giving a mixture of anywhere from I get updates for trips anywhere from like 50 minutes before the windows opens. And of course, I don't see the vehicle until maybe halfway in or at the end of the window. Then there's been times where it gives me the information right as a minute before I get on, you know, the vehicle, it pops in as a text. There's been some occasions, I'll say about a third of the time, I'm still getting no notifications for certain trips, and I can give you a list of those, but it's still, it's just kind of quirky like that. That's what I have to report about that. I still think it's a useful tool. Hopefully we'll get it to the day similar to like Uber, where, you know, once you've, you know, all things are said and done and the customer is able to see and locate their vehicle after a certain amount of time. Like I said, I'm referring to what I use with paratransit in New York City, where, you know, I'm able to see, you know, where the vehicle's at least an hour before. And I get the automated calls, you know, at minimum 15 minutes before, you know, the vehicle's actually in the location vicinity based on traffic conditions, of course, but that's plus or minus. That's a standard beyond this, I guess, right now. What can be sometimes maybe frustrating for a customer is like, okay, I'm getting this like 50 minutes, 30 minutes, or sometimes 2 minutes before, or in some cases, you know, 5 minutes after boarding the vehicle, you know, the information that your driver will be here in 0 minutes or 2 minutes and that type of thing.
Right. And so we that's what we're working on now. We use it internally, again, to provide information to customers. I use it from my cell phone when somebody may call me and I'm on the train or somewhere, and I'm always willing to try to help provide information. Again, it's not perfect just yet, but that's why you're providing us your feedback. I am concerned that we haven't come up with a better way of waiting for the vehicle to be a certain amount of time or distance away from you, as opposed to right now, what you're getting is the imminent arrival. That means Your trip is the next one, even if it's an hour away, but that's not really helpful to you. And that's not really the goal of this project. So that's our next step in this testing phase to get it down to not when it's an imminent arrival, but when it's a near-term arrival, i.e. 10 minutes away, because that was the goal of the original plan, if you remember the original project. Mm-hmm. And that's really my goal here on the short end. First, just let you know when the vehicle is nearby so you can get ready to be picked up. Then, of course, the ultimate goal is to have the vehicle be visual in an accessible format in a web browser so you can then follow the vehicle. You don't have to call us every 5 minutes or 10 minutes wondering, where's the vehicle that you told me was 10 minutes away? So that's our ultimate goal, but there's some...
I mean, for me, I wait, you know, patiently into the end of the window, but, you know, again, that can be something that's approved. I see your hand, Pat, because I'm sure you have questions next, because you're one of the other people who is testing it, and we do definitely want your feedback. But the other emphasis is also those trips, and if you want me to email that to you, which trips, because I get it under a single type of text number, so I'm able to look back at my trip history and see which trips have not, you know, I did not get a message on.
I got you. Okay, yeah, please, you know, anything you send to me, I send to the developers. So yes, please feel free to send me some information so we can try to nail down what may be going on.
All right, Pat, you're up next.
Thank you, Paul. Really set a topic. Thanks. This isn't quite related to exactly what you're talking about, but on the abilities right side, I know it's not quite this topic. I get messages now a little better than I was before, but there's no way to basically message the driver on the abilities right side if it's an Uber coming to pick you up and tell them that you are standing here, that you're wearing this, that, the other, or in my case, that I have a white cane. Is that something that would be coming on the abilities ride side, sir? That would be very helpful because then they will know to look for you.
Now, well, I'm gonna have to check again, Pat, Mr. Chairman, because in my mystery rides, I have been able to communicate with the driver. Now, I've heard this from other customers as well, so it's not just you. I'm not disputing.
Right. Let me be a little more specific. So when it tells me I can communicate with the driver, it's giving me the number. It's 12,345,284 or something like that, which I can't remember all those numbers. It's giving me the entire string of numbers in terms of a really long digit. But what I'm saying that I don't really need to call the driver. What I really need to do, like I do with Uber, is to say, I'm standing outside. I'm wearing A, B, C, D. I'm blind, I have a white cane, as for Patrick. And so I don't need to talk to the driver. And then the driver writes back and says, okay, got it. So then I know that we're sort of in communication. That would be a very useful addition to the abilities, right? And I know you're not there, Paul, but it's somewhat similar.
Right, but again, that's my point. I've been able to do that in my test. So this is what I'm gonna do. Let me see, because one thing I've learned in this process, I hate to say it this way, some weeks it seems like you've got one feature, some weeks then the feature may not be there, or at least some customers may be experiencing different aspects with certain features. I'm going to take two tests this week, probably tomorrow, one on Android and one on the iPhone. And let me try. Maybe something's going on, because I'll admit I haven't done a driver communication in a while, but I've been taking trips just to try some things out.
Right.
But I haven't called or texted the driver in a while. So I will try both tomorrow, see what my experience is, learn from it, compare it to what you're reporting tonight. And if I have to, I'll contact the corporate to say, hey, I did this before. What's going on now?
Oh, that'd be a nice feature. Good. I think it would improve service for people, because a lot of times it can be that last 200 feet, whatever, 300 yards or something of trying to find you and the driver, you know, hooking up, it's going to be the hardest. Yeah.
I will let you know, sir, okay. If I find something out tomorrow.
Great. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. Yes.
No problem. Any other customers as it relates to this current topic? If not, we will move on with our agenda.
I just want to make a quick...
go ahead, Mr. Toy. I will let you speak on this particular topic since you're one of the people who is, you know, testing this.
Yeah. I have been using Uber and using this particular communication feature. The phone definitely works, and I have sent messages, but I do know that the experience can vary, because again, sometimes the browser loads and sometimes it doesn't load, and I have to switch browsers in order to get access. But I understand there is some sort of dynamic going on there with where sometimes certain features are not always accessible for one reason or another. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, thank you. And I think Mr. Blake will note that as he takes that back to the powers that be there working on this application.
Yes, I'm going
to
test this out. And again, you have the feedback from Mr. Sheehan, the feedback from Mr. Torres. We're going to figure out what's that all about. Well, first, I want to make sure I still can do it myself. And then we've got to talk to Uber and just report that up and see what's going on. Why some cases, one isolated. Is it an iPhone issue? Is it an Android issue? Is it a browser? Let's figure out what's going on as to why some days, if you will, customer may be able to communicate with the driver, and some days it seems very difficult, if not impossible, to do so.
All right. Thank you so much. So next we're on the agenda. I'm, you know, skipping around because I want to bring this up before why I have you here, Mr. Blake. Tawan, the conditions of current Metro Access flat fare. So this came from Tawan. So I know he's on, so he can respond to it. Did you want to ask your question of Mr. Blake as it relates to the, we know the flat fares is on, and we talked about this on the phone. On weekends is the flat fare, the $4, and after 9:30 p.m. But Tawan brought up a good point that he wants to ask you, Mr. Blake. Go ahead, Tawan.
Yes, sir. Paul, you can hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, great. So, Mr. Blake, a few weeks ago, it was the beginning of the year, Monday, January 2nd, considered by Metro to be, well, by federal standards, to be a holiday. Mm-hmm. And by Metro, as I recall, running on a Saturday schedule. When my trip populated or was produced initially, obviously depending upon the type of trip you get, under the standard, when the trip was booked, it came in as a, let's say it was the distance, all that came out to be a $6.50 trip. My question is, does the system account for, you know, how we have trips after 9:30 and all on weekends? Mm-hmm. This was technically a Monday, but it was a holiday on the holiday schedule. Should that trip have been classified in the $4 price point as if it were a Saturday?
You know, that's a good question. Philosophically, I know we were running normal service on Metro Access, which goes above and beyond fixed route, which was running a weekend service. So that thought really never came to my mind, but let me follow up on that. I mean, I think that's a very good question. I think Let me see. I can't just promise right now any credits to anybody, but I think it's a very good. You stopped me a little bit, but again, the way you stopped me though is again, and this is some of the challenge. And I know we've had some debates over the last couple of years about fares. When Metro Access is trying to provide fare service that's above and beyond what we call the regular service, you see that becomes somewhat of a challenge, because if we want to be married to the fares, then maybe we want to be married to the level of service, if you get my drift. And that's where we have to pick our battles. But I think you raise a very good point. I'll have more information for you real soon, and maybe depending on the way I take it and the way my colleagues discuss it with me, you may hear about it or recognize it sooner based on your account balance, if you will. But now another thing, though, if I'm not mistaken,
and this would be specific to what he said in, I guess, holidays, like, you so, know, I get Martin Luther King.
January 2nd, yes, holidays.
So,
There are six federal holidays
on a Monday.
Oh, hold on, one at a time, because we have interpreters.
If the holiday results in fixed route operating a weekend schedule on a weekday service. So now I've got to go back and see. Now they were running a Saturday schedule. That relates to the level of service that was on the street. I need to go back and check to see if they were running weekend fares on that Monday. I doubt if they were, but but I don't know at this moment. So I'm going to go back and check. I think that's a very good question that was raised though.
Yeah, because I'm thinking like, you know, MLK holiday, President's Day, mm-hmm. Labor Juneteenth. Day, Juneteenth, when it falls on those Mondays.
Basically, six that fall on a, and then you've got another seven that fall on other days like Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. Christmas, or could be, you know, they could fall on different days like that. So you've got about 13 federal holidays. And that's what I just wanted to say. If you're going to answer the question, might as well expand it out to the other Mondays that are going to be federal holidays, but then I guess it could apply to all 13.
No, I'm with you.
The six that are federal holidays that will fall on a Monday. Yeah.
And I'm going to check again. If I just had to guess, if you just had to give me the roulette, one or the other, I have a feeling that there were not flat fares all day on Monday. I just don't believe that would be the case. But let me check. They were running a Saturday schedule, but again, they were running a Saturday schedule in terms of the amount of resources they put on the street, not necessarily a fare change such as we did that Saturday night for New Year's Eve when we changed the fares to say you were free of charge. So that's a big difference.
So Mr. Blake, I do hear what you're saying. There is the distinction between the amount of service and the actual pay scale that you were on that day as far as trips are concerned. Mm-hmm. So you'll let me know?
Yes, sir, I will.
All right, and Phil, you had a comment as it relates to this topic?
Yes, it's an update. Tino sent out a very important email, which had a copy of the Washington Post article of the last board finance committee meeting. And you can actually attend that meeting on YouTube if you want. But there is tremendous confusion amongst the board members as to simplification as it applies to Metro Access. And during the hearings, during Mr. Sheehan's report to the board, and every time we talk to any board member, we need to explain how complicated it is to understand what our fare is going to be on Metro Access. And if they want simplification, the only simplification we get is Saturday, Sunday, and late night. Clearly today, to Juan's question of how complicated it is on the holidays. But on the holidays, to go to Mr. Blake's comment, you have the problem is they're running on a weekend schedule. So the calculated fare is based upon a weekday schedule, not on a weekend schedule. So nobody knows where they are until the number appears and they say, pay up or don't get on the van. So anyway, I'm just pointing out how important the hearings are going to be because there is tremendous confusion. And if they keep saying simplification is important, they need to simplify. Thank you. Hopefully I didn't go over my 2 minutes.
Thank you. All right. So if there's no other questions, I would like to go on. We got two more topics before public comment. Thank you, everyone, for respect of the time.
Chair Samaford, this is, and I apologize. Pat has his hand up.
I think his hand was still up because he spoke.
Okay, he put it down. Okay.
Uh-huh. All right, so next topic I want to go back to dovetail is the discussion of a second vice chair, subcommittee vice chair. So Ms. Rush and myself had a wonderful three-way conversation with Tawan explaining the role of the chair and the second vice chair and things like that on a Friday evening about, I want to say at least 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks ago, but it was a Friday evening. And it was very fruitful. And I would be happy to report that I would like to recommend, bring out in subcommittee Tawan to be our second vice chair for the Metro Access Subcommittee and and put that out there for a, I guess, subcommittee. Patrick, how did you want to handle this if we feel that Tawan is the appropriate choice?
How about that, Paul?
Because we had a discussion and, he understands the roles and expectations and, and to what you're saying, Pat, a while back about, training new blood to do this. And I think he is the appropriate person to do so. Pat, can you hear me?
Oh, I'm sorry. I put myself back on mute. I don't have a problem with the choice of the candidate. I'm trying to recall in the other vice chair operations, I guess you could call for a vote on this to approve. I think that would be fine.
Okay.
As chair of the committee.
All right. I just want to make sure this is cleanly done out in the public.
Excuse me. Do we have to vote on that? I thought.
I don't think we did with the others. I'm just trying to.
No, we don't. I don't think we have to vote on that. Okay. We're just sharing information that is the choice, and that's a done deal to my knowledge.
Okay.
Right. And on the bus rail side, I think that's how we did it too. I'm trying to remember. Paul, I didn't expect the question.
Okay. The bylaws put that in bailiwick of the chair of the AAC. So, Patrick. And do that. But being a good chair, he should ask the members of the committee if it's a good thing to do, to get advice from the committee. But it's ultimately the chair's decision to do that.
And since Paul just asked me, then we will go with Tuan as second vice.
All right. And then so documented and noted in our meeting notes for this subcommittee. All right, that is done. All right, that is done.
Without dissent, the motion passes.
Congratulations to Juan. My hope is to hopefully at some point this year have you, after observing and talking, begin to lead a couple of subcommittee meetings. All right.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Next is Ms. Williams Hall on web booking reported issues and update.
Actually, Mr. Semaford, I'm going to be giving.
Oh, you're going to do it. Oh, you giving a break here. Good.
no break. All right. So the update is basically our Max team, IT team, has been working with the WMATA IT team, looking into the remaining issues. Based on the investigation thus far, they have ruled out any of the issues that you brought forth that are remaining to be coming from the WMATA side, and have confirmed the issue is with the application. A ticket with Trapeze, who is the system developer, has been opened, and they're currently working on it to correct the issue. So we've been able to boil it down to a Trapeze issue, and they have it now, and they are working to correct it.
All right.
My update.
Because from my end, I do not see the larger level of slowness like I've seen in the past. And also, Mr. Torres, what on this particular issue, have you still seen some slowness? Because I've seen some improvement since we've, you know, reported this issue.
Hello. Yeah. I have not seen any major changes on my end. But the comments that I had for public comments actually will touch on some of this.
Okay.
But because, yeah, so let me not get into to that.
Okay. All right. I just want to hear on this topic because I know you experienced. So, okay. We just wanted to get your feedback on this particular issue, and the rest we can say for public comment. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Now we are at 5:17. And now we can move on. I think I've gotten through every bullet item on the agenda, amazingly. So now we can go down to public comment. Anu, you want to give your spiel about public comment, and then we can take people you have on the list.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Semaford. This is Anu. I just want to remind our members of the public that if they would like to share their public comments with us before or after the meeting, they can do so via emails and phone calls. Our email address is metroaacchair@vmata.com. That is metroaacchair@vmata.com. The second mode is phone calls. The phone number is 202-962-1100. Members of the public can call, leave a message, and we will do a follow-up. Chair Semaford, if I may take another moment to remind AAC members about tomorrow's site visit.
Go ahead before we begin with public comment.
Sure. So I will be really quick. I have sent emails. Everybody has a meeting invite, all the AAC members, for previewing the Fairgates prototype tomorrow at Fort Totten Station between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. Thank you for all the members who have sent in their responses, informing me about their availability or not. And of course, it's middle of the day, so we do understand. But I just wanted to remind everyone, I would also share an email tomorrow morning with any escalator, elevator outages, or any updates related to that station. Thank you.
All right, and this is just a reminder for public comment. Anu, you do have the timer. The people will be speaking for up to 3 minutes. So we can be respectful of everyone's time. Anu, who do you have for public comment?
So Mr. Torres is the only one who has raised his hand. We received no emails or phone messages from members of the public informing us that they would like to make comments. We have right now Mr. Torres followed by Ms. Rush. So Mr. Torres, when you start speaking, I will begin the timer for 3 minutes. Then I would try to find a time to give you a heads up for 30 seconds if I find the appropriate time, but you would hear the sound going on at the end of 3 minutes. So Mr. Torres?
And then Ms. Rush, and then follow, I see Ms. Bush raised her hand.
Yes, thank you.
All right, Mr. Torres, you are up first.
Okay, thank you. I want to come back to the issue of web accessibility. It was an issue that was addressed in terms of simply having a study done of the website. We were promised by Mr. Blake and company that we were going to get some sort of WMATA's interpretation of the report that they got about this assessment. But it's going on to, I don't know, what is this, a second or third year? And we have not heard anything about it. At least I haven't heard anything about it. Things that need improvement on the website have not been done. Accessing content about these meetings is still a very, well, it's a challenge. I can do it because I have experience with the web. But if we're talking about making information accessible to people who don't necessarily have a whole lot of internet skills, it would be very challenging. Also, accessing the audio is a challenge. WMATA has a very simple way of getting access to it on YouTube. In my recommendations that were requested from me, I included that as something that should be done. This committee makes a lot of emphasis about comparing themselves to the WMATA board in terms of how they conduct business. I think that's one of the things that the WMATA board does that should be replicated. The process should not be complicated. And I'd really like to hear from Mr. Blake about what is the status of that report, so that we get a good understanding as to what that whole exercise was all about and what we're in store to get. The other thing is information about the budget. I did ask Mr. Blake about the budgets and getting access to it once it's become available. But again, I'm not clear as to, at least I was not clear as to when the budget was going to be made available. It seems to be a bit of a hide and seek, and you sort of find out about it at the last minute. And one meeting, one chairperson said that, oh, they advertise it on the bus so that we should know about it. I think for somebody sitting on a committee for the disabled saying, look out for signs on the bus, I think was very irresponsible and wrong. Anyway, those are my comments, and I look forward to response. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Blake.
Yeah, well, good points. Let's start with the easier one first, and that's the budget. Mr. Torres, you requested a copy of the budget information, and I responded to you that I hadn't even received it yet. I know what I proposed as the Metro Access budget, and as per usual, it looks like we're going to have a good year in terms of providing customer service. But I don't have the information yet. I don't have the document, but I did promise you that as soon as the document is presented to me and we ensure the accessibility of the document and all that good stuff, I was going to get it to you. Yes, that was about 2 weeks ago, I think I wrote you that email. I still don't have it. So it's not I'm hiding anything or WMATA's hiding anything. I just don't have the document because I don't quite believe that it's been finalized yet, because aside from paratransit, the new GM and the board and colleagues, they're looking at a variety of changes, the potential changes to the fare structure for the purpose, is Dr. Posner's favorite word, simplification. You know, how that results, we will see. But I think there's a lot of work going on in terms of calculating and estimating and forecasting what this would look like and what should, in fact, the agency present to the public. So I just ask you to be patient on that. As soon as I get it, you'll have it. In terms of the work of the accessibility of the website, again, what the process we undertook was, we have our internal desires of improving the website in general. We brought the AAC in for a pre-meeting with the consultants to give the AAC and disability community stakeholders like yourself to give the consultants your perspective. And then at the end, the consultants gave a summary, and we've been working from it. And again, if there are issues that you're finding as you brought the issues to us, we then look at how do we fix that? Is that an issue? Is that a problem? You're bringing it to us. We're taking it serious. I think you have a pretty good point about YouTube. I'll admit I'm a YouTube fan. I subscribe to YouTube Premium to avoid the commercials, and I watch a lot of things, including Metro board meetings on YouTube. So I'll follow up with colleagues. I don't see the harm in that. I mean, we've been doing the recordings for years, even before. Again, if y'all remember, what was that software we were using that they said it has some security issues, just like they said about Zoom, but we've continued to use Zoom. So we've been doing this for quite a while. So I don't think there is any reluctance on our part to make these meetings public, both live and after the fact. Because again, we've been doing it from, I can't even remember the year we started, when I used to bring my personal iPad every month to the meeting in order to broadcast the meetings to the world. So there's no reluctance on our part. We'll see if the YouTube channel is available. Spreaker. Thank you, Barbara Millville. Much appreciated. Yeah, we were using Spreaker way back in the day. And then we tried the other services, and now we're using Zoom, and Zoom has seemed to be working for a lot of people. If there's some challenges with accessing the information that we're utilizing on Zoom, we can work on that. If people prefer YouTube, we can look at that as well. But again, we utilize in this committee software and services, just like with Abilities Ride, where everybody doesn't necessarily like a whole lot of text messages. I mean, I've had that conversation. We want to make it accessible to everybody. I have not tested, I use YouTube a lot. I have not tested YouTube to ensure its accessibility. So while you may like YouTube, we know that we have made the Zoom software work for us, both for live meetings and recorded follow-up observations of these meetings. So I will look into the YouTube piece, I'll promise you that, but we're not gonna just jump to it simply because that's what the board is doing or that's what the RAC is doing. We have a little more desires to ensure everybody can utilize this particular tool for these meetings to ensure full transparency. So I'll look into it, have no problems with it. But in terms of the consultant, they provided us information. They gave us some follow-up work to do. We've been doing the work. You've given us information. We followed up on that. If you have other very specific recommendations, concerns, i.e. accessing the materials for the meetings, accessing the meeting after the fact, please share it with us. You can share it with me directly. You can share it with Anu. Really, you should share it with Anu and Carol Lopez, but feel free to share it with me. And we're going to follow up as we continue to do so.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just have a follow-up statement right. about that or question.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm trying to get at is the whole transparency, because from my experience, there really does seem to be a major transparency issue with the committee and with the way WMATA conducts business as far as these things are concerned. One of the big statements coming out of you and the former GM was that they did not want to reveal the report or release the report because of some procurement that was being done. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to get the feeling, I could be wrong, but it's starting to seem like a smokescreen for not releasing the report. I mean, you guys either need to release the actual report or release your report on the report. Something's got to give, but to just leave it where, well, yeah, because I made a I did send you a bunch of recommendations about things that I thought should be done. You asked me for the recommendations, put the time into it, and you would do your best to implement it if you thought it was acceptable. Now,
and we did. I mean, I think everything you sent us like three specific recommendations, and we implemented all three of them.
Well, one of them was this YouTube thing, and I am not saying you have to do YouTube. No. All I'm just
I appreciate you. Right. YouTube was not one of your recommendations because the board wasn't even using YouTube at the time.
we do need to move on. I have other.
Hold on, Mr. Summer. No.
We're getting to the meat of the matter here, sir.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mr. Blake.
No, I'm saying I wanted you to just finish off your point so I could take some notes and we want to make sure.
The reason why I made the recommendation was because I saw it on YouTube. So because I wouldn't say that if I didn't, you know, it didn't come out of thin air. And I'm not here to argue for YouTube. I'm just, you know, whichever one that you do that is accessible to the disabled community, I am okay with that. But I'm just saying, making your audio stuff available through Windows Media Player is kind of crazy because that's almost outdated.
No, I'm with you on that, but I guess my question to you, and we will end it on this, and we could talk more, you and I, but are you suggesting that the Zoom recordings, not the live meeting, but the Zoom recordings are not necessarily ideal at this stage?
Well, I have yet to see the Zoom recording in MP3 format made available. Mm-hmm. What I have seen the last time I checked it was an MP3 WAV format, which is like the oldest format in the history of computers. Okay, it is extremely old, archaic, and I'm not even sure when Microsoft still supports Windows Media Player anymore. In any serious way. They have moved on from
Mr.
that.
Mr. Torres, that is the second set of 3 minutes. We can surely take you additional comments if time permits.
All right, because I have further hands.
I'm going to follow up on both of those.
Please follow up on that, because it's quite annoying and frustrating to have to deal with Windows Media Player WAV files.
I'm with you.
All right. Thank you. So first we have up will be Denise, followed by Darnice, followed by Phil, and then Pat. So Denise, go.
Okay, this is Ms. Rush. I want to make sure that we talk about the talking points that we want to talk about or get them in our mind for the hearings, the talking points about the Metro Access Fair. And when we go to the hearing and we're representing the AAC and Metro Access, but if you have personal issues, you need to say you're representing your neighborhood or your point of view with the points. But we need to get the points that we want to talk about representing the AAC for the hearings straight. We need to speak about what you want to talk about and your point, and we all get stand as one on the talking points. And the hearing is the hearings are coming up, and we need to get this in order. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rush. Darnese Bush, you can unmute yourself.
Thank you. Next is Darnese.
Yes, this is Darnese. Basically, I have just one question. I think it's probably for Ms. Anderson. The question is, when are you do a reimbursement if your trip is over long or not satisfactory?
Well, let's just, and I know you want Ms. Anderson, I'm gonna let her answer, but just so we're clear, when you say, and I know you used the word overlong, are you saying you were on board longer than you should, than the law allows, per se?
Well, I assume that it was 2 hours, it's not two hours and a half.
No, there's no fixed time for the distance or the amount of time you can be on board. So let's go back to when I first got in this role and I introduced you to the term fixed route equivalent time. So, I hear you.
Okay, well,
but to the point. So that means if your trip on a bus or rail would take an hour, we can't keep you on the vehicle longer than an hour. If your trip, let's say from DC to Upper Marlboro, would take 3 hours, then we can keep you on the vehicle up to 3 hours. And that's when I say bring a book and a pillow and sit back and enjoy the ride, because it could be up to 3 hours. It doesn't necessarily need to be.
It was up to 3 hours, but it was a shared trip.
Correct. That is correct.
To 2 different parts of Maryland, like Forestville, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to think of it, District Heights.
Right.
And coming back to DC, and it took 2 hours and a half.
Right. So that sounds like a very long trip based on...
It was a very long trip.
No, but I'm saying based on bus and rail, if I were taking that trip from your home to that location, that's probably how long it would take me to get there on bus or rail. So that's how long customers need to understand it could take them on a Metro Access vehicle. But let's go to your couple of questions. You're saying the trip wasn't satisfactory, the trip was too long. I don't know if it was too long or not. We have to look at your specific trip. If the trip was too long, though, we do not give you a refund for that. There is no trip credit for that. The trip credit only comes if your trip is late.
Does that mean the driver comes late?
Correct. If your pickup window ends at 1 o'clock and the driver arrived at 1:01, you get a trip credit.
Well, I never get a credit, so I don't know if that's true.
Well,
they come right within the 10 minutes after.
If they come 10 minutes after your window, that's a late trip. It counts against us and you get a trip credit.
Okay. I have one other part to my question. The other part to my question is are you reimbursable or can you be reimbursed if you give them a pickup time and they don't come within that window, within that 30-minute window?
When you say you give them a pickup time,
pickup time is 3:45,
right?
They don't come till 4:20.
You get a trip credit. You don't get a reimbursement. You get a late trip credit. So that means the next time you book a trip on Metro Access, before we take money out of your Easy Pay account, at least $3 or perhaps then the $6, would first come off of this trip credit.
Well,
if you don't get it right away. You get it at the end of the month. It's not going to be there tomorrow.
You don't get it into the end of the next month. Because remember,
next month. Okay.
Yeah, because you have to review it and then give the credit. So if it happens in July and Ms. Anderson will attest to it, you don't get it until the end of the following month.
Get it at the end of August.
Correct.
Oh, no wonder I never see anything.
But it's in there, though.
I just want to be clear of those things.
Yeah, it's in there.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. All right, next person is going to be Phil, followed by Pat.
Chair Samuelford, this is Anu.
Yes.
Before we take rest of the AAC members, we do have a member of the public.
I'll take that person. I see, is it Janice Samuel?
Janice Samuel, yes.
So, 3 minutes.
Yes, I'd like to publicly praise and acknowledge the Metro Access Abilities Ride Program. Today, I had a ride scheduled and my cell phone got offline and I was able to call, and immediately they dispatched an Uber to pick me up, even though I wasn't able to request it via the traditional manner. So I just wanted to let you guys know, I appreciate your responsiveness in making certain that the public is not stranded. Thank you.
Thank you for that wonderful comment. I'm sure management team loves to appreciates that. Phil, you are next.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. This is information and a question. The board had a secret meeting on Sunday. The information from that is there is a dispute between the WMATA board and their safety oversight board as to the use of 7,000 series cars and how they can be reinstituted. As a result of this, starting this week, headways on the orange-blue line are going to drop to 25 minutes. I will ask the question, since Metro Access fares are the fastest parallel route, is the mechanism for calculating the fastest parallel route aware of the new 25-minute headways on rail?
I think that
orange and blue,
right,
and therefore making bus the fastest way to get where you're going in those areas.
You ask a very great question, and your question will be helpful January 24th, because what happened is that the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission, that's the regulatory body Dr. Posner is referring to, Metro appealed their decision to pull 50 drivers from service. Had they not, the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission last evening accepted that that appeal, if you will. And so they've extended the deadline, not to pull the drivers beginning tomorrow, but they've extended the deadline for WMATA to respond to January 24th. So there will not be any change in the headways on the blue and orange lines beginning tomorrow, but Metro has to respond to them about the training that these 50 particular Metro Rail operators have received by January 24th. So we will address this again. But in the meantime, I think you've given me some good homework and our team, and we will follow up with our colleagues in terms of the calculations that come out of the trip planner that then feeds into our fares. So that's a good point you raise, but it won't start tomorrow, if ever, but it could begin on January 24th if the agency doesn't respond. But I'm almost certain the agency is going to respond. Now, how the Safety Commission responds to our response is another question, but we'll take this up on the 24th if it occurs.
Thank you. That is an over example of simplifying affairs. And also very interesting, since Mr. Wiedefeld stepped down early for this same issue. And obviously the new GM hasn't done any better than the former GM in training.
All right, so I want to step back to Ms. Rush's point. So for the next subcommittee,
just for the record, you know, I got to just say something just to that, because I don't want it to go. just for the record, and again, this is Metro Rail Safety and the Metro Rail, just to be clear, the Washington Metro Rail Safety Commission does not do any work with regards to Metro Access. We're regulated separately. Just want to say that. But to WMATA's standpoint is that there's just here, in this particular case, is a fundamental disagreement on the training that occurred. Our position is, in fact, that the drivers, all 50 of them, did in fact receive all of the hours of training required. The training that was received was on the main line, but with passengers instead of being on the main line without passengers. And that's where the dispute is at. I don't even think the Safety Commission is disputing that the drivers were in fact trained. So I think this is, while it sounds like the same subject matter, it looks kind of the same. I really think this one is a little different. Sort of like if you look at classified information and you know that they're two different stories, they look very similar, but they're very two different stories. So in this case, unlike what happened earlier this summer or last summer, where there was the accurate statement that drivers for the trains were not trained, in this case, the drivers were in fact trained. Just wanted to add that for the record, just for the sake of the record.
All right. Just want the new to note for our next agenda. We have a discussion about talking points for the hearing, as Ms. Rush recommended. And Pat, we're going to take you next, followed by Tino.
No, thank you, Paul. Mr. Blake, thank you for that additional information. You outdid WTOP. I heard some of what Phil was saying this morning, but you gave us a date and you gave us more information. So congratulations on that. And I appreciate that. That's good to know. And it's a good point, Phil, once again, on simplification. The other thing I was going to say is, I know going back to what Mr. Torres talked about with respect to Zoom and WAV, that's interesting. I would say as far as I know the RAC uses Teams rather than Zoom to run their meetings. And they've been doing a hybrid meeting. RAC is going, I think, to go back more to virtual because they, I know they've been having issues with it, but I think that they find that they may get better attendance because of a virtual meeting. But I think right now we're having very good luck as far as the Zoom platform at these meetings. I certainly would not want to, although I use Teams all the time at work, if I have my choice between Zoom and Teams, I will go with Zoom. If I had my choice between Zoom, Teams, and WebEx, hate WebEx, I'd definitely go with Zoom. And I would go with Teams rather than WebEx. But interesting about the WAV file, I wasn't aware of that. So, and this is extremely well run, sir. These meetings, as far as the Zoom platform is concerned, there doesn't seem to be any accessibility issues whatsoever.
Is going well, to be
thank you. We appreciate all the feedback, and we're, as you've seen over the years, we've made a lot of adjustments, and we're trying to be as accessible and as transparent as possible. Again, we began all the way back with Spreaker. I personally love Spreaker, but you know, I don't run the authority, and I have colleagues in IT who thought there were some safety concerns, so we've migrated through a couple of different packages, and now we're at Zoom, which has shown to have some appeal. So we really like working with you all, and we want to keep these meetings positive and fruitful. But certainly, we're not looking for rubber stamps or anything in that nature. We want to hear unvarnished opinions, and we just continue to go in that direction. It's been a great run with you all. I've enjoyed it. But again, this is not about trying to have rubber stamps or people just agreeing with Metro staff. The truth will get us farther than just all lovey-dovey in some cases. So we just keep it going. Just got to be respectful of everybody. And that's what I try to do. We just ask that of the committee members, the staff, as well as our very interested public stakeholders.
All right, next will be Tino. Again, remember, we're keeping this the public comments as it relates to Metro Access Service. If it relates to bus rail, it needs to go to bus rail. Tino, go ahead, 3 minutes, and then followed by Tawan.
I hope that wasn't a reprimand.
I'm just making a statement. We want to keep it to the to what the subcommittee spirit and interests are.
I was interested in hearing Phil earlier talk about Metro Access, the flat fare, and then about, I don't know, 10 minutes ago, Denise brought it up in terms of the budget hearings. And I'm really concerned that we, you've dealt with a lot of individual experiences on Metro Access this afternoon, but nobody has tackled the question of talking points about Metro Access, the budget, and I'm anxious that we do that.
And that's why I made the statement, Tino, just before you spoke, that telling Anew to put it on the agenda so we have a good in-depth discussion in February, because that's not going to happen until the March. Well, so there's time to talk about it.
Yeah, that'll be a one-shot deal in March, but I think more thought ought to be given as early as possible, including even now. I'm curious. There's a lot of discussion about Metro Access. It must appear somewhere in the WMATA budget. What is the budget for Metro Access per year,
Mr. Blake?
Yes, sir. So this year, operating budget is in the neighborhood of $190 million.
$190 million.
Yeah, say that again, sir.
$190 million.
$190 million, yes, sir. And that's what we call our operating budget. Then there's a separate, smaller budget that we use to purchase vehicles and other capital equipment. But for the sake of what you and, you don't use Metro Access that much, but what the customers use in terms of Metro Access, we're talking about a service of $190 million, and that covers the service and the vans that you see on the street, the sedans, the Office of Eligibility that also handles a reduced fare for fixed route and people with disabilities, as well as Metro Access eligibility. It covers the call center and the quality assurance of the service as well. And then, of course, it covers my salary and the staff salary and things like that. You know, Terrian's got the biggest of all of us. I'm just making sure she's watching.
The cargo van.
But that's, yeah, I hear you. But yeah, that's, and abilities ride comes under that as well. So that's the budget that, generally speaking, is what we're working with here.
$190 million annually. It's interesting that tomorrow we're going to visit the Fort Totten Fair Gates, where they're the Randy Clark, the new GM, is attempting to reduce the number of fare evasions. Fare evasions recently has been up to $40 million a year. That's one third of the budget for the whole Metro Access. $40 million a year. It's more than one third of the Metro Access budget. So I think we ought to make sure we keep things connected. The budget connects everything. Last week during the bus rail subcommittee meeting, people seem to believe that fare evasion has nothing to do with Metro Access. Well, it has a lot to do with the budget, which has obviously a lot to do with Metro Access. So I'm anxious for us to get going with some talking points about.
So Tina, what I'm going to suggest, and I have one more person to speak before he must end at 6, is take it to the wonderful leadership of Pat the AAC, if we can borrow a little bit of time to begin discussion of it, and then the bulk of it can happen during the subcommittee next month. But I do understand that. Let's see if we can borrow some AAC time to do that. If Pat and the wonderful leadership is amenable to that.
Okay. Can I just, after Mr. Farmer speaks, I would like to say one thing that's critical that Tino added, or Mr. Subcommittee Chairman added. So I would just like to say that after Mr. Farmer speaks.
Okay, go ahead, Tawan. You got the floor. You're the last to speak, and then we'll end with Mr. Blake.
Thank you very much. This was a conversation that Paul and I had just as a lead up to this month or ultimately next month, because I'm just bringing the topic up so that it is on the record. And then we can, if it can be answered, great. It becomes a part of the record. A colleague of mine within the blindness community was concerned about what they perceived as equal access regarding fare card use. So as a user of Metro Access and Metro Bus, Metro Rail, it's my understanding that a person who, let's say, goes through the Metro, acquires a Smart Trip card, can utilize this card. And I believe it's been mentioned, but I'll just for the record of more recent record, they can acquire a card, use it, register it, catch the Metro bus, Metro Rail, and such. And convert it over to a digital card by way of their phone through the Smart Trip or Metro app. Now, the concern at hand is that a person with a Metro Access Smart Trip card, which perceivably is a card that can be used on the Metro bus and Metro Rail as well, cannot be converted over to the digital platform.
That is correct. So let me just quickly respond to that, because I know I got the background, but let me just give you the quick response of where we are right now. So that a person who has a visual disability, or anyone who's a Metro Access customer, or excuse me, before we get to Metro Access, anyone who has a disability or non-disability and would like to have a Smart Trip card, a Metro Smart Trip card on their phone, can absolutely do so. However, if you're a Metro Access customer and you want to take advantage of free bus and rail, that card at this time is not converted, because right now the way the program works is if I buy a Smart Trip card and I apply funds to my card, I could put that on my iPhone, my Android phone, and even my work phone if I so desire. And as long as whoever has that phone, whether it's me or my wife or my granddaughter or whoever, if they're using it, at least it's getting paid for. The Metro Access Smart Trip card provides free access to bus and rail. Therefore, the card needs to stay with the customer.
So am I interpreting that to mean, and I don't want to misinterpret what you're saying, is that a concern of,
I mean, let's use the word fraud, yes.
Well, I did not want to go there, because I'm saying, You're making a statement that the concern is that a person, in this particular case, a Metro Access user, has a greater likelihood of fraud than a person who...
That's not what we're saying at all. We're saying because Mr. Farmer, if the person wants to have their card on a phone, you can have a Smart Trip card on a phone. It just won't be a free card. Metro has made the decision, because riding bus and rail for free is not a civil right. It's a benefit that we're granting to customers as an incentive to use the most accessible bus and rail system in the nation from our perspective.
Sure.
You want to use that for free, you use the Smart Trip card. If you prefer to use the card that's on a telephone, then you're saying you are willing to pay to use that service. It's not that they're more likely to commit fraud than somebody else. It's just the fact that if you have a smart trip card and you put it on multiple devices, regardless of which device you put it on, it's going to deduct the fare when it's used.
All right. It is six.
Let them follow up real quick.
Okay, because we're at 6 p.m. We're going to lose our interpreters.
Yeah, no, I absolutely heard what you said. So,
but I had a follow-up to Juan's, but a Metro Access user who has the Metro Access card for the free rides could give that card to someone else and they could inappropriately receive a free ride.
Sure they could.
So what you're saying is you're reducing the abilities for or the methods in which an inappropriate ride could be obtained. Is that what you're saying?
We're saying that because of the fact that the Smart Trip card can be downloaded to multiple devices and the cards do not require a fare, we believe that in that case, the card needs to stay with the customer and not be on a digital device that can be spread to other users potentially. Can a Metro Access customer give their card to their daughter, their son, or a friend, and they get a free ride on Metro? Sure, that's possible. But then we're taking the calculation that that person then is denying their own selves a trip because theoretically, when you get on a Metro Access vehicle, you're supposed to show your Metro Access card to the operator.
All right, it's 6:01. We do have to end. This is a wonderful, fruitful discussion. I will extend it and put it on the agenda for next month. Can I get a motion for adjournment?
Motion.
All those in favor, please do so by saying aye.
Aye.
Nays, thank you so much, and we will see you next month.
Take care. Great.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, bye.